Hello and welcome to The Late Debate with me, Audrey Carvel, on the programme between now and 11.
Fellow South Africans, our beloved Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela, the founding president of our democratic nation, has departed.
Africa's most beloved son has died. We'll have full reaction and analysis on Late Debate after the news from Eileen Whelan. Well, apologies for that. We're having some technical difficulties there reaching the newsroom tonight. But obviously, the breaking news within the past 15 minutes has been the death of Nelson Mandela, the former president of South Africa and the anti-apartheid campaigner. He was known, of course, as the father of the nation. His death was announced around 9:45 by President Jacob Zuma.
I am now in a position to announce that...
Fellow South Africans, our beloved Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela, the founding president of our democratic nation, has departed. He passed on peacefully in the company of his family around 2050 on the 5th of December. 2013. He is now resting. He is now at peace. Our nation has lost its greatest son. Our people have lost a father. Although we knew that this day would come, nothing can diminish our sense of a profound and enduring loss. His tireless struggle for freedom earned him the respect of the world. His humility, his compassion, and his humanity earned him their love. Our thoughts and prayers are with the Mandela family. To them, we owe a debt of gratitude. They have sacrificed much and endured much so that our people could be free. Our thought.
That was President Jacob Zuma, the president of South Africa, there announcing the death of the former president of South Africa, Nelson Mandela, within the past few minutes. I'm joined now from South Africa by Tolly Hollingsworth. He produced two landmark global broadcast events for Nelson Mandela, the first calling for his release from an apartheid prison and the second celebrating that release. Tony, you're very welcome indeed, and thank you very much indeed for joining us. Your own reaction to news of Mr. Mandela's passing?
Oh, well, it's very sad. I'm here in South Africa and just watched the announcement that Jacob Zuma has made on national television. And clearly it's a very, very sad moment that such a great man has passed away. As Jacob Zuma said, we all expected it, but of course it happening is a different thing.
Exactly. And he was 95 years old. He had been ill, yet his death is a profound moment for many, many people across South Africa.
Well, it is. I think it's across the world as well as South Africa. He was not only an important person for the transformations from apartheid in South Africa, he was an important moral figure, I think, across the whole of the world. It was in 1948 that the United Nations made the Declaration of Human Rights. It was also in 1948 that the apartheid regime put in place the apartheid laws. And it seems a strange contradiction that those two should have happened at the same time, but they did. And he fought those laws throughout his life.
How well did you get to know him, Tony?
Well, I didn't get to know him so well. I only had a number of, I suppose, three, four times that I met him personally. But I knew of him, of course, for all the time that he was in prison. I knew of him, but at that time, really, what I knew was what the most of the world knew, which was the speech he gave at the Rivonia trial, his third trial. And that speech was a very, very powerful speech that he made, not under cross-questioning, because he wasn't going to defend himself. He admitted the guilt and questioned the court that he was in, and gave a very profound speech that went around the world. And really, from 1964 onwards, that speech was what we knew of Mandela, because he was locked in. And that speech ended with a most profound paragraph at the end, which said, "During my lifetime, I have dedicated myself to the struggle of the African people. I have fought against white domination. I have fought against black domination. I have cherished the ideal of a democratic and free society in which all persons live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It is an ideal which I hope to live for and to achieve. But if needs be, it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die." And I think that speech, really, that speech, which is much longer than that, that's just the last paragraph, was really the Mandela that most people knew for the majority of time, for the 27 years that he was in prison. And he was prepared to die for it, but he didn't die for it. And he came out and became the first president in 1994 of a free South Africa with universal democracy written into a rather wonderful constitution.
And do you believe, was it that speech that sparked the international rallying for his release and the anti-apartheid movement, or did that come later?
Well, it sort of came before, really. In 1945, Mrs. Pandit, the sister of Nehru in India, even before India was free of British domination, stood up in the new United Nations in San Francisco in 1945 and called for the representation of all non-whites, as they were called, in the world, in the new Council of the United Nations. And put on the agenda, even at that first United Nations, the Indian delegation put on the agenda the racist policies in South Africa. And really, from that point on, there was a growing international solidarity movement. But certainly in terms of prisoners, he was the iconic figure. And in terms of that speech from the Rivonia trial in 1964, that was an iconic moment, and a moment that really rattled on for ages.
And, you know, he wasn't a young man when he went into prison, and he endured such brutality on Robben Island and suffered great illnesses as well. And to survive this long into his 96th year is quite a testament to the man.
Yes, it's amazing, really. And I was at the Nelson Mandela Foundation a few months ago with the chief archivist going through some of his papers and things. One was a paper in which he recorded his weight whilst in prison. You see it going up and down, but it was hopelessly low at some stages. So he really did suffer, as did all of those prisoners.
Mm-hmm. How did you get involved then in the broadcast events for the first one, calling for his release, and then the second one, but the first one in particular?
Well, there are a number of factors that sort of came together. Jerry Dammers, who'd been running an organisation called Artists Against Apartheid, and I had conversations in 1985 that sort of led to this idea in 1987. Other conversations I had with Archbishop Trevor Huddleston in 1987 to actually kick it off and start working on it. Archbishop Trevor Huddleston, who'd been a priest out here in Sophiatown in South Africa, in Johannesburg, and who then sort of had to get out of Johannesburg because he would have been probably imprisoned or killed by the apartheid regime for his efforts to defeat it. He then became the president of the British anti-apartheid movement, and I spoke to him about the possibility of arranging a global broadcast for Nelson Mandela as a tribute to him on his 70th birthday. Excuse me, and that's really the conversations came from that I started working after I'd spoken to Trevor and got his political backing for it all. Mm-hmm.
And I suppose for many, that concert, that event, it raised consciousness right around the world of Mandela's imprisonment, but also it really helped to eradicate the label terrorist, which was applied to Mandela for so long.
That's quite right. It actually went to reach an audience of 600 million when there are only 5 billion in the world, across 100 countries' broadcasters. And the only time in history that the world's broadcasters have come together for a political cause, really. And the event did. It by involving all of those broadcasters, it sort of made it impossible for them to ever allow anyone on their channels ever to call him a terrorist again. And so it helped. It helped, if you like, clean up the image that he had or other people had given him. But it also raised the profile. It reached an audience that wouldn't necessarily have been touched by the anti-apartheid campaigns to that point.
And, Tony, you're there in South Africa at the moment. I mean, is South Africa united in regarding Mandela as the father of the nation, or would there be still some small pockets who would view him in those ways as a terrorist?
Well, if there are any small pockets like that, they're certainly not making their voice known. I would have thought that that almost everyone has changed the way that they think about him. He came out of prison, and not only did he live up to the speech that he'd given and many things before the speech, but he excelled, and he managed to take the nation through a very, very difficult period, especially before the elections, and pull them together. So it was a rather marvellous feat.
And do you think he ever thought that he would achieve what he achieved, the first free elections, multiracial elections, him to become president of his native country?
Yes, I don't think he did it to become president in that way, but I certainly think that he did believe that the strategy of the ANC, especially the ANC in exile, because he was in prison for so long, would come through. And he will have known throughout the 80s, as things really started to take a grip on the apartheid regime and squeeze them by way of sanctions, by way of political exchanges, by by the way of stopping trading in certain types of products with them, and then eventually the banks stopping to fund them. He would have known of all of that and therefore realized that he was going to be released at some point. And that therefore the ANC would have a possibility of winning the election and being the majority party. They would probably win. I'm sure he contemplated all of that, but that's not what he went to prison for, but I'm sure he contemplated it.
Hmm. What do you think, I know it's difficult to say, but how do you think he would regard the South Africa of today?
I think that he would probably see it as a job not yet finished. And I don't think anyone can expect a country to have suffered such racism for hundreds of years under various different empires and to have immediately transformed itself into something as perfect as its constitution. It's going to take a number of generations, and I think he'd see it as a job halfway through.
And the inevitable question, Tony, I mean, it's difficult to know where to start in terms of summing up Nelson Mandela's legacy, but would you try for us?
Oh, gracious. I think that what he stood for is in that speech, and that is he stood for equality. He stood against any form of racism, and he stood for equality and to treat humans as equal beings across the world. And I think that's the bit I'll take away. I'm sure other people will take other things away. That, for me, is the most important part of what he did.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us on Late Debate tonight, Tony. That's Tony Hollingsworth there, who produced the event, the broadcast event for Nelson Mandela. Two of them, one calling for his release from an apartheid prison, which had an audience of 600 million people around the world, and then the second one celebrating it. That is our main story here on Late Debate tonight. It's a different programme for you tonight because of the news which broke at around a quarter to ten within the past half an hour that Nelson Mandela, the former president of South Africa, has died. He was 95 years old. He passed away at his home, surrounded by his family, a little earlier on this evening. And his passing was announced by the current president of South Africa, Jacob Zuma. We're going to stay with this for as long as we can on the programme tonight. We'll have a look back at some of the key moments in his life in a few minutes. But I want to talk now to Danny Morrison, author and... are you still a member of Sinn Féin, Danny? You're joining us this evening from Belfast.
No, Audrey, I am a Sinn Féin supporter.
Great.
I'm currently a full-time writer.
OK. Well, Danny, your reaction on hearing the news of Nelson Mandela's death?
Well, I just find it extremely sad and fairly emotional. He was long a hero for freedom-loving people around the world. I was in jail in Sunday the 11th of February 1990, when he walked to freedom and walked through the streets of Cape Town for the first time since 1962, and the prison canteen was totally hushed. You know, we just saw this very tall and dignified old man come out of prison, and I was there that day with a friend of mine, Pat Sheehan, who was the last man on hunger strike in 1881 and who survived the hunger strike, and who later, along with his wife, the late Siobhan O'Hanlon, met Mandela. And Mandela told Pat Sheehan on Robben Island, whenever they were planning a hunger strike, they called it Let's Do a Sands, named after Bobby Sands. Mm.
I remember when I was in South Africa about 10, 15 years ago, many people would say to me when they heard I was from Ireland, they would immediately say Gerry Adams. And many people there made the comparison between Gerry Adams, Sinn Féin and the ANC. Now, obviously, many people will take great issue with that comparison for many reasons, but do you think it's a fair one?
Well, certainly Nelson Mandela recognised Gerry Adams' qualities, as did, for example, did Yasser Arafat and Fidel Castro. But there's nobody to compare with Nelson Mandela. You know, in the last 100 years, there's just no figure who walked this earth who can compare to the dignity of that man and what he came through on behalf of his people.
Did you ever meet him personally?
No. I've never been to South Africa.
But you're Martin McGuinness and Gerry Adams would have met him frequently, wouldn't they?
Well, I was in Croke Park, I think it was the night of the Spice and Olympics when Mandela was there, but I was too far away. But anyway, you don't need to know you don't need to have met the person to feel that you knew the person and to feel the immense humanity that he transmitted to this world.
And was he an inspiration for many people in Northern Ireland?
Well, of course he was. I mean, I know that the analogies between South Africa and the North, you know, there are some, and there, of course there are also massive differences. Mm-hmm. I do remember that Verwoerd, who was the person who jailed Mandela, once said that he would swap all of the repressive legislation in South Africa for just one section of the Northern Ireland Special Powers Act. When I was writing my first novel, West Belfast, I interviewed people who had been in the Merchant Navy and who had been to South Africa and who told me what the repression was like there. And, you know, it had an incredible effect on me. And in fact, in the first year, I chair Fail and Fumble, the West Belfast Festival, and we held a mural competition for young people in 1988, and it was the occasion of Nelson Mandela's, I'm not sure how many years he had been in jail at that stage, it was the occasion of his birthday. And The mural competition was won by these young people who painted a huge mural of Nelson Mandela up on the walls of the Falls Road, and that mural is still there to this day.
I mean, he is as Tony Hollingsworth was saying there, he really is an iconic figure, recognised globally, appreciated globally, and he really was the father of the South African nation, wasn't he?
Absolutely, but I mean, reading his autobiography, I mean, it's absolutely so moving, and the love letters, and you know, as an ex-prisoner myself, and having read it in jail, you can see the anguish of wondering what's happening to your family, wondering what's happening to your loved ones, and you know, he just, what he sacrificed was incredible, and then his compassion and forgiveness were totally remarkable. You know, there's just so many of us could not do what he did, and in terms of, as soon as he came out of jail and the discussions he had with the clerk, I once interviewed F.W. the clerk about Mandela, and of course, I mean, he himself recognised the magnitude of this man, of this personality.
Well, that's interesting. And what else did you hear from de Klerk in terms of that whole, you know, time in 1994 with the free elections, the multiracial elections, and Mandela becoming president of South Africa?
Well, for the sake of peace, you know, Mandela brought on board the National Party, brought on board de Klerk, mm-hmm. and the people whom he represented in order to, you know, to have that transition period. And I think that you could probably say that regardless of, you know, Mandela, of course, was committed to an earlier armed struggle, and then he was committed totally to peace. And I think that his influence on the situation at that time, because it was on a knife edge, it could have went either way. There could have been massive bloodshed and civil war, and it was Mandela's steady hand and the authority that he just naturally emanated, which convinced people who had suffered quite a bit, who had been oppressed for decades, if not for centuries, they went down his road and he saved lives.
It was an incredible achievement. And was it a difficult choice for F.W. de Klerk to go on board with Mandela?
Well, I mean, the arguments that I had with F.W. de Klerk at that time were that he just thought that when the state killed people, it wasn't terrorism and it wasn't murder, because they were the lawful authorities, whereas the violence of the ANC was terrorism and was illegitimate. And I just thought that he himself had not managed to make the same transition that Mandela had made in the other direction.
Danny, stay on the line if you would. Susan O'Keefe is with us. Susan, you're a Labour Party senator. We were originally going to be talking about domestic violence against women on the programme tonight, but obviously this story broke at 9:45, that the news that Nelson Mandela had passed away. What are your thoughts this evening?
Well, obviously, it is a profound moment. I think all of us have been touched. As Danny said, you didn't have to know the man to feel that you knew him. And I suppose, you know, most of us growing up in Ireland would have been aware of apartheid. Many of us would have marched and would have attended fundraisers and all kinds of events. And perhaps there are people listening in or young people at home who have no real knowledge of what apartheid meant. The very idea that people, because they were a different colour, were treated in some appalling fashion. When you think about it now, it seems almost ridiculous. And yet, that is what was going on. And here was a man who stood up and said, "I'm prepared to die if that's what it takes to change this." And it's hardly surprising then that he has become and became the icon for the world, and the respect that he's been held in for such a long period of time, even though he was absent from the world stage for 27 years, is really quite remarkable. And I suppose, you know, as I say, for young people to have almost have forgotten that, perhaps one of the things that may come from his death is that people will talk again about that, and how sometimes when things look like they cannot be solved, that they are unfixable, that actually one man can make a difference, that things do change. And while I think Tony Hollingsworth was remarking that it is a work unfinished in South Africa, certainly it's a work one hopes it's going in the right direction. And it, there has been progress. And 1994 was the moment of that, the start of that progress, which Mandela contributed to. I have, a, I suppose, a personal memory of Nelson Mandela's visit to Ireland, to Dublin. I think it was around the time of the of Ireland doing very well in the World
Cup. Italian 90, yeah. It was Italian at the end 90. Of that, June
and,
1990.
And Jack Charlton.
Freedom of the City of Dublin.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And I was there on the street with thousands of others. And I remember people chanting, "Ooh, Paul McGrath's dad." And that was, I suppose, a very affectionate Irish welcome for a great man. But what? But it was, in a way, a great moment. People were trying to find a way to say, "You're welcome. We have our hero here. You're our hero too." And people were laughing and smiling and singing. And it was a lovely occasion. And I had, I mean, I like Danny, but most people will remember that moment when he walked out of jail. In fact, it was two days before my father died, and we were sitting with him in the hospital, and he was very ill. And it was the last thing that we shared with him, that he was well enough, if you like, to realise what had happened. But it was a profound moment to see him walk out and to see and to know somehow, in a way, you knew that he would take control again, that he would offer a reassurance. And that obviously was true leadership, mm-hmm. Of a kind that, you know, when you look around the world, it's hard to find, actually, even now. And I, you know, there are many people tonight, I'm sure, who are grieving, who are extremely sorrowful. But I hope that the world will find comfort in the great achievements and the single love that he showed for his nation.
Susan, thank you very much indeed for that. Stay with us if you can as well. We'll come back to you. We can talk now to Christina Lamb, who is foreign affairs correspondent with the Sunday Times newspaper. Christina, thank you very much indeed for joining us. You have met Nelson Mandela, haven't you? Can you tell us about those meetings?
Yes, I was based in South Africa when he became president, and so I met him a few times while I was living there. He was one of those people, well, there's nobody like him. He was somebody that just seemed to have this aura about him. Even I remember seeing him when he was meeting with people like Naomi Campbell coming to visit him, supermodel. He still had this sort of aura of dignity always about him. And he did things like whenever there was any dinner or any kind of major event, he would always at the end go into the kitchens and talk to all the staff and, you know, always make sure that nobody was left out.
He seemed like a truly humble man who never forgot where he came from, what happened to him, and the sacrifices and the brutalities that he endured.
No, absolutely. And I think, I mean, the most remarkable thing was just the lack of bitterness, you know, to have gone through what he'd gone through, to have spent 27 years in jail, and yet to come out and be so completely just not seeming to blame anybody and to just get on with things. And it was just something really remarkable and, you know, was a really very, very special person indeed.
Well, indeed, and we've been talking about that time in 1994 when he was elected president of South Africa, and in the time leading up to 1994, and he was really almost single-handedly responsible for not allowing South Africa to tip over into bloodshed. How do you think he managed to achieve that?
I think it was partly because of what I just said, that, you know, his own lack of bitterness for what happened to him gave such an example for tolerance for everybody else that it really made a huge difference. And I think that, you know, there's very, very few people in this world that would have gone through what he had suffered and yet to have come out at the end and been like that and just to really...
But it's quite incredible that one man could have achieved that, though, isn't it? I mean, given the anger, the bitterness, the hatred that must have existed after decades upon decades of apartheid, for him to guide his country to multiracial democracy.
Yes, I mean, I think that, you know, the country next door, Zimbabwe, which has you know, gone so differently, you know, shows the difference that one man makes. Where Mugabe actually at the beginning did appear to show that same tolerance, but very quickly all of that changed. And I think, you know, it's, well, I've never met anybody like Mandela. I mean, just the, there was just this sort of, as I said, you know, even in really different kind of meetings with people, he always just had this incredible dignity and aura about him, mm-hmm. and amazing empathy for people.
How do you think, I've been asking this question of previous guests, what do you think he would make of the South Africa of today?
Well, I think, you know, after he stopped being president, I think, you know, the situation, unfortunately, you know, it changed quite a lot. I mean, he set such a great example, but perhaps, you know, where he didn't do so well was in managing his successor. And I think Thabo Mbeki, who followed him, you know, really didn't have the same kind of status and show the same kind of tolerance that Nelson Mandela had. And, you know, that's affected the situation a lot.
Did he unravel a lot of Mandela's work?
Yeah, he didn't set the same kind of example that Mandela set. You know, possibly a different kind of person would have led to a different situation. You know, it's very difficult, of course, after all those decades of apartheid to really kind of mend the situation between people. But Mandela was a really quite unique figure, and even would have been hard to have had somebody, another person quite like him.
Yes, because I mean, the living standards of black South Africans, they're still quite poor in the overall majority, aren't they?
Yes, and of course, you know, when Mandela took over, also, that, you know, they've been decades of having a very skewed education system too. So even if you were trying to then even things out, they a lot of the black population didn't have the same kind of skills and educational background that white people had. So, you know, we're not in the same position to do things, and that's going to, you know, it takes a long time to get out of that situation.
Christina, we appreciate you taking our call tonight. Thank you very much indeed. That's Christina Lamb, foreign affairs correspondent with the Sunday Times newspaper, who covered South Africa during her career back in the 1990s when Nelson Mandela was president of South Africa. We can go back to South Africa now and talk to journalist Fiona Ford, who's on the line. Fiona, just take us through the events of the day which culminated in the announcement by Jacob Zuma about 45 minutes ago that Nelson Mandela had passed.
We don't know the consequence of events. This has come as a huge, huge shock, and genuinely it has, because I can tell you I've just been told by a family member that the late Mr. Mandela's two daughters, Zenani and Zinzi, from his marriage to Winnie Madiki Della Mandela, they were actually watching the premiere of The Long Walk to Freedom in London when they were notified their dad had died. They were asked to leave, obviously, the film studios. They're now in a hotel in London. So this came as a total shock. They didn't obviously know. I don't think the family would have known. I think this genuinely was a very sudden passing. There was a news item this evening at about maybe 6 o'clock to say that there had been a family meeting at his house in Houghton, which is a suburb here in Johannesburg. And, of course, the family dismissed that to say, no, that is not true. We've been down this road so many times, as you know. It's been a long, long farewell to Mr. Mandela. His illness has plagued him for quite some time now. He's been critically ill. We're all very familiar with that statement that he's critical but stable, and we've been trying to get our heads around what is very much a non-medical condition for quite some time. But I do think in the end he passed very, very quickly, and the fact that his three surviving children were actually out of the country and very poignantly watching The Long Walk to Freedom on a big screen in London, I think says it all. This was a sudden passing, and this was a very shocking passing, and as you can imagine, a very, very sad passing
for
the family and also for South Africa.
It is. It's very sad that some of his children weren't there. And he often said himself that he wasn't sick, he was just old. And what do you think the mood of South Africa, I mean, so far, what has the reaction been? What are people saying?
Hey, this is all happening in the dark of night for all of us here. It's after midnight. We're 2 hours ahead of you in Dublin. So this is something that's been talked about on telephone lines, on social media platforms, on TV, etc. Tomorrow, I can imagine, we will see a huge outpouring of grief when the people of South Africa hit the streets. You have watched it, I'm sure, many times on television when he has been in hospital and there have been vigils outside the hospitals where he has been treated. Thousands and thousands of people coming to celebrate him while he was alive, which is actually something very, very nice. Now that he's gone, as I say, we've been waiting for this moment for some time. I do think the fact that his death has been so dragged out in some ways that we've almost been expecting this for quite some time and yet at the same time hoping it just wouldn't happen. I think it has taken the shock factor maybe away from it all, but it doesn't diminish the grief and it doesn't diminish the huge, huge loss and the huge hole that South Africa's been created in South Africa this evening by the passing of what is referred to as the father of the nation. That was Mr. Mandela's name, a fond name by the people of South Africa and a very, very apt name.
Well, exactly, Fiona. Give us some idea just of his stature in South Africa. He's 95 years old, but he is truly an iconic figure there. And as you say, very much father of the nation and revered by millions.
Yes, and I don't think I have ever witnessed the stature of somebody like Mr. Mandela anywhere in the world. As you can imagine, for a long time in media, we've talked about this for some time. How do we possibly treat the passing of an icon? And when you think about it, until Mr. Mandela died at 10 to 9 yesterday evening, there was no other icon alive. And I'm not sure when the last person of his stature did walk this earth. People have often talked perhaps about Gandhi. Maybe some people would agree, disagree. But he was unique. He was on his own. He was absolutely huge. And for that reason, his funeral plans have been so carefully planned by the state, by the South African government, because they know that the whole world will want to bid farewell to this man, a very, very huge, iconic figure. And that is why from yesterday for the next 14 days, this is what it's going to take to lay Mr. Mandela to rest. It's apparently going to be a very long, very formal, as you can imagine, but very global farewell, a very, very big, big funeral, because the man himself was so large. He represented the fight against the struggle against apartheid. Apartheid, what was described by the United Nations as one of the worst and inhumane projects in the history of the world. He became the symbol of that fight and ironically fought that from behind prison bars for 27 years, served a lifetime behind bars, became the symbol of this fight that started in South Africa, that spread to the rest of the world when his colleagues in the African National Congress went into exile and began to fight against the National Party of South Africa that had come into power in 1948. Apartheid had lasted a long, long time, 1948 through to 1994. He was the symbol, he was the face. We're all very familiar, even different generations all over the world, familiar with the Free Nelson Mandela songs. I think people of all ages can tell you they recognise the name Nelson Mandela. Not all of our very, very young members of this world, and I'm talking young tots, would know who he was, but they certainly know the name. A huge figure, and then he went on, as you know, to become the president of South Africa. He served one term. He sent a very, very strong signal to a continent that is home to many dictators, where presidents refuse to step down or heads of state refuse to step down. He gave it a 5 years and he walked away. And then in the late 1990s, he went into retirement. He was also very active. We would see him occasionally, but it's been a long, long time now that he hasn't played any active role in society. We haven't seen him. We haven't heard of him. And yet his presence was felt. You know, for a man who has either been treated in a hospital or at home in Houghton, his presence was still felt out on the street. And he very much had a huge place in the hearts of all South Africans.
Absolutely. But for a very long time, of course, he was a controversial figure. His critics would have regarded him as a terrorist, as a communist sympathiser. Have those words been used about him in a very long time?
Not at all. It was very hard to refer to Mr. Mandela as a terrorist, a man who really brought together black and white South Africa and did it better than anybody before him could do. pre-1994 and certainly since then, as we know, and as the speaker before talked about his predecessors, or his successors rather, they never had the same kind of stature, and they've never been able to bring this very socially and economically divided country together like he did. If we think back very quickly to 1995, a year after apartheid ended and South Africa was still a very divided place, it hosted the Rugby World Cup, and he donned the famous jersey of the Box, the South African national rugby team. He brought what was a very white team, and it belonged to the Afrikaner side of South Africa, a team full of white men, a team that would not allow blacks to play on its side pre-1994. And he went out there and he had the ability just to bring all of those men with him, and with it all of the entire stadium that watched and the whole world that were viewing from TV boxes in Europe, in North America, in Asia. An extraordinary man. It was very hard to call him a terrorist. He did fight against apartheid. He did fight against a very big power. But he fought on the right side of wrong. He fought for what was good, and he's always represented that, and to try and attach those tags. Some people still do, and I think the people who try to do so, we won't hear very much of them over the next few days, but I'm sure their voices will be heard before long. These are the people who are on the losing side of that battle. So I think that was a badge that he shed a long, long time ago, and even for the period that he held it, as you called him, you recalled that label of a terrorist and a communist sympathiser. Those even who would have held it while he was a member of the Communist Party or did sympathise with him were still in their minority. He managed to rise above all of that, and he was much more than just a terrorist, even if that badge could have ever stuck, or a communist sympathiser. He was a man who fought for black liberation, he fought for freedom, he fought for democracy. And today in South Africa, the line of the African National Congress, or sometimes it comes into question, is that they fight for a non-racial and a democratic and a non-sexist South Africa. And that's very much Mr. Mandela's South Africa. That's the ideal that he fought for.
Fiona, thank you very much indeed for that. That's journalist Fiona Ford joining us live tonight from South Africa, where it's coming up to 20 to 1 in the morning there. Just to remind you, you are listening to Late Debate. It's not a normal programme tonight because about an hour ago, the President of South Africa, Jacob Zuma, announced to the world that Nelson Mandela, the former president and lifelong anti-apartheid campaigner, had passed away at the age of 95. We're getting tributes from various people tonight, and we can go back to South Africa now and talk to journalist and author Mark Aviser. Mark, your own reaction on hearing about the death of Nelson Mandela?
It's a feeling because, in a way, publicly, he's been dead for a long time already. He hasn't made any public statement for a very long time, for a couple of years, and he's been, you know, effectively on life support for the last few months. It's certainly not a surprise that he's dead, but it gives us all, South Africans and all over the world, a moment, I guess, as we acknowledge that he's no longer mortal, to think about what he brought us, and what he brought us was immense. So it's very hard not to feel sadness, even though it's completely expected.
Well, exactly, and you say South Africans around the world, and I would say to you that most people around the world, whether they're South African or not, feel a profound sense of sadness at the death of Nelson Mandela tonight.
You know, he often comes across as something of the last good man. He embodies a kind of hope and optimism and will to do good without wanting any personal benefits that we don't find in public life anymore. That seems to have been lost. And so I think that a lot of that sadness is a sadness about somebody who was willing to fight evil and banish evil. And I think he became a symbol of that to people all over the world.
You, Mark, you've written a number of books, but you're best known perhaps for your biography of Nelson Mandela's successor, Thabo Mbeki. And we were talking earlier to another journalist from the UK who had reported from South Africa in the 1990s, and she was making the point that, you know, Thabo Mbeki didn't carry through the work of Nelson Mandela, and perhaps Nelson Mandela today may have been very disappointed with the South Africa of today. What's your view on that?
It would be impossible not to be disappointed with the South Africa of today when held against the possibility and the optimism that Mandela embodied, which was in a way utopian. The project of reconciliation that Nelson Mandela, of racial reconciliation, that Nelson Mandela came to embody by saying, I have forgiven my oppressors, therefore you all should forgive your oppressors, just as I have become free, we in South Africa are free, was an incredibly noble and very beautiful sentiment, but the path towards liberation and reconciliation, as I think we South Africans have discovered, is way more rocky. And this isn't in any way to let Thabo Mbeki off the hook. I think in many ways he failed as a president. But I don't think anybody could have lived up to the expectations of the Rainbow Nation, of the Madiba miracle, the Mandela miracle, that became a kind of global catchphrase at the time of his release and his accession to presidency. It's almost an impossible act to follow.
Yeah, well, exactly. And for Mandela to get to that point in 1994 when he was elected president of South Africa, I mean, was that almost the ultimate achievement? And then his term in power, did he perhaps achieve less than people might have expected?
He was very clear that when he came to power, he'd only be responsible for two things. And the first was racial reconciliation, national unity, making the country whole again. And the second was South Africa's national integrity, its place in the world. For the rest, he decided that it was appropriate to leave it to a younger generation, and that generation being Mbeki and now Jacob Zuma, who was part of the same generation. And in a way, I mean, on the one hand, we can sigh and say, if only Mandela, because he clearly was such a great man and a man of such probity and judgment, we can sigh and say, wouldn't this country have been better if Mandela were 10 or 15 or 20 years younger? And we might also sigh and say, wouldn't this country have been better if Mandela had held on to power? But I think the counter to that is that one of the things that made Mandela unique, particularly on the African continent, was his willingness to respect democratic process and generational process, and not to become one of these hard skeletons in power, such as Robert Mugabe just to the north, and to say, it's time for me to pass the baton on. And in a way, that's his greatest legacy, because he did that, and because he sort of inscribed that into this notion of a fixed term, of passing power on, inscribed that into the South African political consciousness. I don't think, certainly in my lifetime, in our lifetime, anybody would be able to counteract that and become the kind of president for life that we have in Robert Mugabe north of the border.
And has racial reconciliation endured to this day, Mark?
It's a very difficult question. I think what I was trying to say earlier is that it's too easy to say, just because I forgave my oppressors, you all should forgive your oppressors and we should all be one nation, the rainbow nation of God. It's way more complicated. And it's, as I said, it's a rocky road. There are times in South Africa where the racial reconciliation just takes your breath away. And when you watch kids playing together or people working together or mixed families developing, you know, with biracial families developing, and you think, my Lord, this has happened in my lifetime. Who would have imagined this? But then you look at the terrible inequity, particularly the economic inequity, and the way that is still racially profiled, that poor people remain black, and even though there are more and more wealthy black people, on the whole, wealthy people remain white, and you look at the lack of possibilities for educational possibilities, work possibilities for poor young black people. You look at the sort of cycles because of violence and unemployment that exist exclusively in the black urban class. And you think, well, where is the racial reconciliation, and will we see it in our lifetime?
That's very interesting. Just finally, Mark, how will South Africa cope without Nelson Mandela? I know you said that he hasn't been around for a very long time, but he was still alive. He was still this great iconic figure who people knew was still there. He's no longer there now.
You know, I suppose I think we have to accept that he has not been there for at least 3 years. And if we accept that, then we'll see that we've been coping, you know, fine or not fine. But nothing has changed. Something has changed emotionally, but nothing's changed physically or practically. Nelson Mandela has not been around since 2010. He has not said anything publicly or done anything publicly since 2010. So he's been publicly dead for a long time already. It's a very difficult thing to say and accept. But I think it's really important to accept that, because when we accept that, we'll understand that, of course, South Africa is going to be fine without him, because it's been fine without him for the last, what? I mean, he stopped being president in 1999.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mark, look, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme this evening. That's Mark Aviser there, who's a South African journalist and author of Lost and Found in Johannesburg. He also wrote a biography of Thabo Mbeki, South Africa's second democratically elected president. It's almost 8 minutes to 11 o'clock. You're listening to a tribute programme on Late Debate, tributes to Nelson Mandela, the former president of South Africa, who passed away tonight. His death was announced about an hour ago by the South African president, Jacob Zuma. On the line now is Alex Vines, who's head of Africa programme at Chatham House in London. Alex, thank you very much indeed for taking our call tonight. What's your assessment of Nelson Mandela, his legacy, and South Africa without him?
Well, he'll be sorely missed in South Africa. He's unique. There's nobody else like him. He's the kind of hero of the generation. To be honest, nobody else's death has been so prepared neither, which goes to show how globally significant Nelson Mandela is, let alone significant for South Africa. So there are very, very few people. It's only one in my lifetime where for the last 6, 7, maybe 10 years, I've had media planning his death, in effect, being concerned about where my availability would be. There's nobody else, and it shows how important he is. In terms of South Africa, I think the country's come to terms that he was an elderly man, he was ill, he's 95, and that this would happen sooner rather than later. So I think the country will move on, and that's as it should be. But this is a really historic moment.
Would he be proud of the country he's leaving behind?
In terms of majority rule, absolutely. My experience of South Africa, I've been visited South Africa many, many times over the decades, is that it's a better place by far, with majority rule, obviously, but because of the spirit of reconciliation and the vision of a rainbow nation that Nelson Mandela engendered. And although there's criticism of South Africa today, it truly is an innovative country, very creative, and spreading its investment and its experience across the African continent. So it's that these are all legacies, I think, that Nelson Mandela could be proud of.
And yet, as our previous guest was saying, you know, while racial reconciliation continues and as he said himself, would take your breath away in some instances when you witness it, there is still racial segregation existing, particularly economically.
Oh yes, I mean there's massive challenges still for South Africa to face. There was a recent report of 20 years of South Africa produced by Goldman Sachs, which was published a couple of weeks ago. It kind of looked at the impressive growth in various areas of the economy. In fact, it said that that white South Africans had prospered more under majority rule since Nelson Mandela was released and became president of South Africa than previously under the apartheid system. There are more white South Africans in middle class. White South Africans are actually more prosperous, something people would often don't appreciate. But there are challenges, particularly youth unemployment, and sluggish industrial growth and the need to reform the mining sector. The romantic period, obviously, the goodwill period, the honeymoon period that followed after the end of apartheid, that's gone now. And the African National Congress, the party of Nelson Mandela, is having to prove that it can still deliver social services, service delivery, as it's called in South Africa. And, of course, that gets more and more difficult, the challenges.
Absolutely. What influence did Nelson Mandela have on the wider Africa region?
Well, Nelson Mandela had his legacy is mixed in the continent. He tried to intervene on a number of occasions with moral authority. He was pushed back in Nigeria. In fact, he tried to lobby for the release of some activists, and they got hung by the former president Abacha in Nigeria. He was more successful in some of his other mediation attempts. But early post-apartheid South Africa, the South Africans seemed to think that everything in Africa could be solved the South African way. So there was a lot of idealism too, although later in the Mandela presidency, a greater sense of realism came in.
So sum up his legacy, Alex, if you would, for us. It's a question that'll be asked many times over the next number of days and weeks. But how would you assess his significance globally and in South Africa itself?
I think his most important contribution was to ensure reconciliation and the creation of a multi-ethnic post-apartheid state in South Africa, which will be one of the great powers of the world. That's his legacy, by encouraging reconciliation and making South Africans of all creed and colour feel that they were part of that project, however much the flaws.
Thank you very much indeed for that. Alex Vines there, Head of Africa Programme at Chatham House in London. We're almost at the end of the programme, but within the past hour or so, the United States President Barack Obama has paid his tribute to Nelson Mandela.
I would study his words and his writings. The day he was released from prison gave me a sense of what human beings can do when they're guided by their hopes and not by their fears. And like so many around the globe, I cannot fully imagine my own life without the example that Nelson Mandela set. And so long as I live, I will do what I can to learn from him. To Gresham Michel and his family, Michelle and I extend our deepest sympathy and gratitude for sharing this extraordinary man with us. His life's work meant long days away from those who loved him most. And I only hope that the time spent with him these last few weeks brought peace and comfort to his family. To the people of South Africa, we draw strength from the example of renewal and reconciliation and resilience that you made real. A free South Africa at peace with itself. That's an example to the world. And that's Madiba's legacy to the nation that he loved. We will not likely see the likes of Nelson Mandela again. So it falls to us, as best we can, to forge the example that he set, to make decisions guided not by hate, but by love, to never discount the difference that one person can make, to strive for a future that is worthy of his sacrifice. For now, let us pause and give thanks for the fact that Nelson Mandela lived, a man who took history in his hands and bent the arc of the moral universe towards justice. May God bless his memory and keep him in peace.
President Barack Obama paying his own tribute to Nelson Mandela, who has died at the age of 95. That is our main story tonight. Nelson Mandela has died at the age of 95. President Jacob Zuma made the announcement just over an hour ago. He said the nation has lost its greatest son, adding he is now resting, he is now at peace. A big thank you to all the people who took our calls tonight, and to Susan O'Keefe and to Kitty Holland, who came into our programme tonight to discuss something else entirely, but who stayed with us for the duration. We're back on Tuesday at 10 o'clock. Till then, have a good weekend.
The Late Debate with Audrey Carvel was produced by Donal O'Herlihy. The broadcast coordinator was Maeve Mooney, and the researcher is Richie Byrne. Sound supervision tonight was by Kieran Dunn.